Time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and it is episode number 240, where you might recognize this voice from the Mormon News Report podcast that we've started doing on this feed, or I think, 2014 or 15, we did a, like, top stories of 2000.
I think so. We did it once. We tried to do it other times.
Yeah.
It just never happened.
It didn't happen. It's Brant Malone, everybody. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, welcome. And across the studio from me, which is cool. Normally, you're a Michigan man.
I am. So this is, like, the first time we'll have quality audio, which I've never had before.
Not it's always, me and you.
I know. Well, because it's always been like, all right, let me just throw some crap together I got at home to try and get something nice, but yeah. So it's nice to actually be face-to-face, too, because that's
yeah,
fun.
And this will be, I think, the longest that we've ever spent together as well.
And probably the longest we've ever talked, too, between text messages and stuff like that. So.
Although I could be fairly long-winded with text messages, for sure. Brant, you started up with the Cultural Hall when I contacted you. Five years ago?
Yeah. So what happened was I was doing a, I was part of a Facebook group, and I was doing this daily news report where I would take the top stories of the day. I literally throw it in a Facebook post, and it would just be links. And I remember you reached out to me and said, hey, this is really cool. I want this on my site.
Yeah.
And that's when we started working together, and that's when the news report started. And yeah, I think it's been 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years. I can't remember.
I mean, it was at least before your latest born, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I was childless at the time, which is why I could probably spend so much time doing it, because it's like, what else am I going to do? It's no big deal. You know?
Yeah, and we'll get into that, obviously, a little bit more in a bit. But for people who don't know you, obviously, they've had a chance to catch a little bit of, as you coined the phrase, snark and Mormonism. Tell people about you. A lifetime member of the church?
Lifetime. So, born and raised in Michigan. Both of my parents are converts. My dad converted when he was 18.
How'd they get him?
How'd the Mormons get them? So my dad was driving in the backwoods of Michigan.
Okay.
I saw a couple of guys who were in white shirts and ties carrying briefcases at the time. So this was back in like the 70s.
Yeah. Right? I wish we could still do that, but now they won't let you do that anymore.
I know. But you know what? I bet you there's going to be some like missionary hipsters who are like, oh, I'm not going to wear a backpack. I'm going to take a briefcase.
Yeah, no, you bet.
So anyways, he pulled over because he thought they were having car trouble because they're in the, you know, these dusty backwoods. Pulled him over, and from the time it took them to go from wherever he pulled over at to a gas station, they had given him the first discussion, and I guess you could say he was hooked.
Yeah.
So that was him. And then when he met my mother when she was 21, that's when he basically said, look, this is important to me. I think you should check it out. And that's when they started doing the missionary discussions. They were married civilly first because of the one-year thing for sealing.
States thing.
Yeah, I know. Go figure.
It's fine in Europe, but the American saints need a different whatever. That's a different thing for a different time.
Which, by the way, I will say, like, give it 5 years. It's coming.
You think?
It almost came whenever the gay marriage decision won.
Right.
Was. I heard it was very strongly considered. Anyways, so... Like I said, they're both converts, so I'm the oldest in my family.
So mom was like, okay, I love you that much, I'm in?
I think it was more like, okay, I'm intrigued to hear what's going on.
Cool.
And then by the time she started taking the discussions for her, it was, I can describe it this way. My dad was always a very logical person when it came to the church. Like for him, the things that the missionaries were saying just made sense.
For
my mother, she was more emotionally in tune with things. Mm-hmm. And she could, you talk to her, she'll say, yeah, I definitely felt the spirit and everything like that. Whereas my dad says, I mean, I felt the spirit, sure, but it was more everything clicked and made sense. Mm-hmm. So when they talked about like the pre-existence, he's like, well, yeah, of course we lived with God before we came here. And of course we're all together. That makes sense.
And your mom's like, that makes me so happy.
That's exactly what, and like tears and all that stuff. That's exactly what it was.
What a great balance for being raised in, right? Because you can have both sides.
Yeah. It's interesting. As I've gotten older, I found that my dad and I can have more discussions on things that are going to require some nuance and maybe some more introspection on things to really flesh out an issue. Whereas my mother, on the other hand, and I think she'll agree with me saying this, for her, it's very much... yeah, we got to focus on like what makes us feel good, make sure we're feeling the spirit and things like that. So it's interesting for me to grow up with.
Now, that's a nice thing, Brant, but how do you feel?
You have no idea
how accurate
that is.
How do you feel when you read that, Brant?
Yeah.
Do you feel good? Are you feeling good right now?
I can't tell you how often we've had that conversation.
How many kids in your family?
So it's myself. I'm the oldest.
Okay.
I've got a younger sister and a younger brother.
Okay.
My younger sister and my younger brother both aren't very active.
Uh-huh.
But I would say it's more just from some life circumstances and more from... You know, so I'm going to try and not soapbox too much.
Sure.
One of the things that does bother me about what we hear online so often when it comes to Mormonism, especially the younger generations, is, oh, they're being exposed to all this stuff,
sure.
and that's where they're falling away. I can tell you, it's been my experience. I don't think that's the case. I think it's more apathy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's not that big of a deal, and so you just stop coming, and then it's just whatever. It's not a part.
Yeah,
of
when
life.
You're used to not going, it's like, oh man, Sunday at 9,
right,
for
right.
3 hours.
Whereas,
are you kidding
I mean,
me right now?
You know, they'll still come with us. They'll
sure.
go on Christmas, and you know, that's what we need. You've got like Christmas Catholics. We need
sure.
like Christmas and Easter Mormons,
yeah, okay.
or even like Christmas, Easter, and like Pioneer Day
yeah.
Mormons or something like that.
Yes.
So anyway, so I was the oldest. I was the first one to go on a mission. My dad didn't go on a mission.
How was that for them? Were they like, man, you need to go because it's the redemption of the Malone family? Or were they like, well, if you want
know,
to.
So it was always this expectation that I was going to go, like
yeah.
with any family. I work with the youth in my ward, and I'm pretty open about telling them. I never had one of those like feelings from on high. Okay, you've got to go now.
Right.
It was more, okay, this is, you know, you turn 18 and you graduate high school and then you go. So.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was more the way that I would view like military service.
Sure.
You go, you do your time, faithfully, you work hard and all those things,
sure.
and then you're done.
Yeah.
Whereas I wasn't having this like, oh, I just, every waking moment.
There's
I've
a
got
burning
to do
in my bosom. It's
right.
like, no, okay, so checklist. I got high school, got the diploma, all right, and
yep.
I worked for a little bit, maybe went to school, and then it's like, man, now mission.
Yeah, and because it was all part of that checklist of like, and so I can't. So I graduated high school. I went to a community college for about 6 months.
Yeah.
Just because for me, it didn't make sense to go out to school
sure.
and then come back and serve a mission. But I knew that, you know, look, all my friends from high school are graduating and going to college.
Right.
So it wasn't like I was living the biggest social life when everything
sure.
was happening. So for me, it was like, okay, I want to go to college because I want to have all that fun stuff, but I can't do that until I serve a mission. So therefore, I've got to serve a mission.
Sure.
So I went to South Korea on my mission, and I think for them, because I've been the oldest and because I'm the first to do all these Mormon things,
mm-hmm.
it's been a very interesting experience for them to watch all that happen and really live vicariously through me. So I'm sure if you come from a big Mormon family and you're like the fifth one to serve a mission, it may be, I mean, the emphasis is still there, but maybe not as much as the
sure.
first one. For me, it was doubly so because I needed to be extremely, every email or letter I wrote home, I need to be extremely detailed because that was the only way that they were going to experience
sure.
it.
Sure. How are we supposed to know what this is? Your dad, like you said, didn't have the opportunity to
right.
do it. So figuring out how exactly it was through your eyes. That's
right.
awesome.
Yeah. So it was, it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that professionally in my career, serving my mission in South Korea has been nothing but a benefit.
Yeah.
Mostly because not that many people know Korean, first of all. And I'm in the automotive industry, and Korea is huge for the automotive industry.
Sure.
So it's been a big positive.
But you're working for the wrong company if you're going to be a Korean speaker, right?
Because
you were Ford, right?
No,
no, Chevy.
Motors.
General Motors.
General Motors. Yeah. So GM's got a big, I mean, we've got a big presence.
Okay. But Hyundai is the big Korean car
yeah,
maker, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. I mean, and the thing about Korea is you've got Hyundai and Samsung.
Do you notice how he corrected me?
I know. You know what? I feel so.
Hyundai.
It's like a. it's like if you talk
you
to like
Hyundai
a Spanish
and you're
speaker.
Like, no.
I know.
Hyundai.
It's Hyundai. No, it's like if you talk to a Spanish speaker and you're trying to talk about Mexican food and
right.
they're like, oh, you mean you want
burrito?
Yeah,
exactly.
Or a burrito. Yeah. So. Anyways, yeah, it's been so those two companies kind of rule everything in Korea, whereas
sure.
like General Motors is number third.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
So
how
yeah,
did you get into that? Why would you do something like that?
Why would I go into automotive?
Yeah,
well, I mean, I live in Michigan.
Sure,
that's like
I mean that's like the bread and
everything.
Butter of Michigan. But was that the thing? Like, is that the next checklist? Is that Brandt's life?
No,
like it's like high school. Okay, boom, mission. All right, now I'm working for the automotive industry. Well, I don't want to be on the line, so I guess
so is this a time when I should bring up that I'm a third generation employee of General Motors.
Is that the case?
No, actually, I had no intentions of going to the automotive. I didn't even have intentions once I graduated high school of moving back to Michigan.
Okay.
I didn't want to go back to Michigan.
Okay. But it got you somehow.
Yeah. So I finished my mission. I went to school at BYU Idaho.
Okay. Heard of it.
Graduated in 2009, and obviously with all the news about BYU Idaho recently,
uh-huh.
You know, I get kind of feisty about it because I've got a complex relationship with it.
Sure.
On the
and
one
you mean
hand,
recently the LGBT professor saying, right. hey, you know what, I love you, and they're like, nah, you're out.
Yeah. And you know the problem? The problem is
very boiled down, everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the very simple part of it. So I've got this complex relationship because on the one hand, I really have so much fondness, and I met professors that I'm still in contact with that changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, for example, I also had a bishop who almost did not sign my temple recommend for my wife and I to get married.
Mm-hmm.
not because we were fooling around or doing anything like that. Yeah. It was because...
Boring.
I know. Like, it was literally because I was going to her ward with her as we were going through the temple prep class together.
Right.
And not his ward.
Right.
And he didn't like that.
Right.
And so... You know, I had a few fights and things like that.
It's clearly the point, Brant.
I know, obviously. I mean, and that was, you know what? That was like his, that was his thing. He was like, well, why aren't you going to my ward? Well, I'm going to her ward. You can, the bishop in that
because
ward.
Because when we get married, we'll be going to the same ward, and we'd like to get into the habit of doing it now, because worshiping allows the spirit to be a part of our relationship.
And by the way, we're going to temple prep class together. Wouldn't that be good if we're going to get married and go to the temple to do all this? So I've got that, but I've also got all these positive things that I have that just... Rexburg's got this weird pull on people. If you've been there for any amount of time, mm-hmm. it will pull you back because it's this weird, simple part of the country that is completely different from anything else. Mm-hmm. But if you can make it through there for a couple of years, you're just going to have this weird fondness. So I graduated in 2009. The economy was just in the tank.
Yeah, that's terrible right then.
You know, I was in my senior level. So I got a bachelor's degree in business with an emphasis in finance. I was in my senior level classes, and we had CNBC on in the classroom while everything is just tanking. This is the fall of 2008. Everything is tanking.
There's just tears.
And like, we're sitting there going, what does this even mean? And the professor was looking at us like, guys, I don't know what to tell you. I hope you guys found jobs.
Master's degree, anyone? Anyone so, thinking about that?
Yeah, so that was one of the things where it's like, well, if I look back now, I should have done that. Anyways, the crazy thing was the people who had graduated the semester before I did, so in the winter or basically January like 2009, they all got jobs. But all of us who graduated in April of 2009, we struggled for a while. So I had been looking for a job for probably about a year prior to graduating at that point. Didn't really have anything. So I was like, well, I guess we'll go back home and live with my parents, which is like awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is every husband and wife's dream. Exactly. Cool. Your mom, your dad. Awesome.
Especially for my wife. It's like, yeah, let's go live with the in-laws. Isn't that amazing?
Where's she from?
She's from Payson.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Payson, Utah. So south of Provo. Here.
South of Provo. Yeah. Okay. So we moved back with them. I bounced around jobs for a while, just trying to find anything that wasn't basically minimum wage.
Yeah.
And then auto industry started rebounding in Detroit, and that's when I was like, all right.
Well, because we bailed you guys out.
I mean, you can say you bailed us out, or we can say that we actually made some changes to our business and we did some stuff. But, you know, that's yeah. You know. I mean, we can go from Mormon talk to automotive talk if you want.
Discussion.
So we did that, and that's how I got in the auto industry.
Okay.
Was everything like that.
So how did you get into, let's answer this question, and then we'll take a break for a second. How did you get into the online Mormon world? Because that's where people, even before the cultural hall, would know, you know, Brant does the online Mormon thing.
Yeah. So when I got back from my mission, first of all, when I was on my mission, one of the things that's tough about the Korean language is that they'll tell you up front, this is one of the more difficult languages in the world for anybody to speak. It's like Finnish, English, and Korean are considered the top three. At least that's what they told us.
Sure.
Right? And so I went through 2 years of like gospel doctrine lessons or gospel principles lessons where either A, I just didn't understand the language and what they were talking about, or B, it was very simplified. Mm-hmm. So I got back and I was so excited because it's like I have been waiting for a gospel doctrine class where we can get into some of the good meaty stuff. Mm-hmm. Because as a missionary, you know, as a missionary, you're not going to get into that much.
No.
That's not what you're supposed to be doing, right?
How do you feel? Good. Perfect.
Perfect.
We'll and, leave it right there.
Yep. And Book of Mormon's a good book, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Read it. Yay!
So I start going back to, you know, get home. I'm going to church and everything. And I was disappointed with the gospel doctrine lessons that we had. Because I was like, wow, this is really... I thought this was like the big leagues, you know? So I go off to college thinking, okay, I'm going to go off to college. I'm going to go to BYU and I'm going to be in religion classes there.
Right.
And that's what it's going to be.
We're going to get deep there.
Not really.
Yeah.
It was like a seminary class, right? And one could debate the merits of having it that way or not. So basically I was like, okay, I'm going to start looking around the internet because I bet you all that anti-Mormon stuff out there, you can prove it completely wrong. You just have to know what you're talking about.
Right.
So I started getting into a little bit of that. I found some of the old FAIR message boards, the apologetic message boards that a lot of Mormons were on. And I was bouncing around there, and then I found the Bloggernacle. That's where I spent a lot of my time, but I was more of a lurker. I just read as much as I can. This is at like the height of Mormon blogs.
Explain to people the Bloggernacle in case they're going.
So the Bloggernacle is going to be all the big Mormon blogs out there. So places like By Common Consent, Times and Seasons, Feminist Mormon Housewives. This is back in like 2007. So you have Mormon Mentality, Mormon Matters, things like that. All those blogs that have been around for probably a decade That's where a lot of stuff was happening. And really, before everyone was going to Facebook to talk about Mormon things in their separate groups, that's where you went. You went to read whatever new blog post was out there and then get in the comment section.
Yeah.
So I moved back to Michigan in about 2009-ish. I'm focused on finding a job, or actually finding a decent job so I can, you know, my wife and I can survive.
Move out of your parents' house.
And move out of my parents' basement. I mean, we're trying to live the high life, you know. Yeah. And I had always been intrigued with podcasting, even from like 2007, like the early days of podcasting. I was intrigued. So every once in a while, like once a month, I would do a search on iTunes to look for Mormon podcasts. So I found a lot of the mainstays out there. Mormon Stories had been going for a while. There's a couple other ones out there, but I saw one that was Mormon Expression.
Mm-hmm.
Mormon Stories really never did anything for me. I was actually more intrigued with some of the guests, especially in the early days, like Richard Bushman. Like,
sure.
Who wouldn't listen to an interview with Richard
Sure.
Bushman?
Right? A 4-hour long interview with Richard Bushman.
Right, which I've seen people transcribe and like footnote and use. That's how good that interview was with Richard Bushman. So I found this one called Mormon Expression. I listened to a few of them. They seemed pretty objective. But I heard this one. They were propping him up as the faithful Mormon voice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this guy is not who – if you're using this to say, well, this is what the Mormons believe about all these issues. And they got into some stuff. They got into some of the different sections of the Doctrine and Covenants. They got into like the evolution of the Word of Wisdom and things like that. I was sitting here going, there's no way. So I was emailing the host. His name was John Larson, basically saying, you gotta put me on. I want to come on because I want to give another faithful Mormon perspective on this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started the whole thing. From that point, I kind of became the Mormon that they bring on and beat up a little bit.
Okay.
But for me, I was sitting here saying, I already know that audience. The audience that's going to listen to it is going to skew more disaffected. But at least... I can at least give some sort of a defense, because back when I was in college going through all this reading as much as I could, there was one quote from Neil A. Maxwell that always stood out to me. It was in some random like side quote on an Ensign article that said, we should not be allowing detractors to the church to take uncontested slam dunks. And that was my thought. I want to be able to at least look, if you're going to slam dunk, at least let me put my arms up in the air and try and get in the way a little bit. Not to say that your point is valid, but to offer the correct pushback that needs to happen.
Sure.
And because I would even say within the church sometimes we need that pushback. We
Absolutely.
Need people saying, whoa, you're getting a little too off base here. And that's how everything started.
Nice. Let's take a break real quick. We'll come back in the second block with Mr. Brandt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm working on the name exactly. Mm. We'll get something that I like.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll come back and do that in just a second.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails with feedback from customers. Here's one. Dear Dan, I want to thank you for the help you gave my mom with her computer. She's gone from being frustrated to fascinated. I'm not overjoyed, though, that every picture of me that she has is now on Facebook. But she loves the computer and is happier than I've seen her in her whole life because of your team. You guys are the best. Signed, Happy. Dear Happy, in our company training meetings, we always teach everyone to treat every customer like they're your mom. At PC Laptops, we'll hold your hand every step of the way. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $799 with a lifetime warranty at any PC Laptops location. $799? You can't beat that. While supplies last, quantities are highly limited. Please visit us at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. I know you'll be happy too. Hey, Ma!
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 240 with Brant Malone. All right, so you get into this thing, and I love that that's how you did it, because it's like, hey, me, you should talk to me. I really feel like you should talk to me. And they obviously did it, this being the folks over at Mormon Expression. Mm-hmm. So then what happened? Because that's not around anymore, right? Is Mormon Expression still around?
No. So we did that. I did that for maybe a year, 18 months, maybe even 2 years.
Okay.
And then John Larson took a break. And the group of us that were doing it.
Are we air quoting break?
kind of, I mean, he legitimately did take a break. He had a lot of stuff going on in his life, and I think for him, he was getting to the point where, you know, John had been an open ex-Mormon for a while, and he was getting to the point where it just wasn't that entertaining for him anymore.
Right.
And so he took a break, and a group of us decided, hey, we still really enjoy doing this. Someone phrased it as like, imagine a group of friends that gets together and jams out in someone's garage on a Saturday afternoon. That's right. What we thought that we did. So then we started a new podcast called Mormon Expositor.
Uh-huh.
And I did that for probably about 3 years. And the whole purpose of Mormon Expositor was to offer a variety of voices and perspectives on different things. We did the typical Mormon podcasting format, which is you're going to take a topic, you're going to have a panel, you're going to debate it within the panel, mm-hmm. and then you'll put it out there. And I think at that time...
Typical.
I know. Well, you know, it's interesting because that leads to a bigger discussion about Mormon podcasting right now, which right. is why I'm intrigued with what you're doing with the Cultural Hall, with mm-hmm. what we're doing with the Mormon News Report podcast, and a couple others out there, is that was... At that time, that was new and fresh and exciting. Oh, wow, you're going to get it. For example, one of the a podcast I was most proud about that we did was we did a 3-part series on the Mark Hoffman bombings.
Mm-hmm.
People knew about it, but they didn't know. A, it wasn't available in an audio format. And B, that team that did that tried really hard to make sure that they were well-researched, that they were offering book suggestions, that they were doing direct quotes on things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that time... That was really unique and interesting.
Right.
The problem is that was all done, you know, 3 to 5 years ago. That's right. not interesting anymore.
Right.
And I think if you're someone who's wanting to get into Mormon podcasting, you have to think of something different. You have to do something different because that is relatively easy, but it's been done so many
right.
times before.
Anyway. Almost same sort of hack a little bit at this point, right?
Right.
Like, no, great, here we go.
Right. Okay, we're going to do this again.
Mark Hoffman, I roll.
Or even, oh, great, we're going to do the 1,000th podcast on polygamy.
Yeah.
And okay, so Lindsay Hanson-Park, we both know Lindsay,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, love Lindsay.
Your polygamy podcast is very good because it's something completely different. It's not just, oh, polygamy, right or wrong. It's,
right.
Originally, A, let's talk about all the wives of Joseph Smith. Then let's talk about the entire history of polygamy. And then let's talk about what's going on currently with fundamentalist polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different, right? So we did that for a little bit. John Larson came back, and we integrated more with him. So we had the Mormon Expositor podcast under his empire, I guess mm-hmm. you can call it. And then my daughter was born, and that's when I realized, oh, wow, when you have kids, you really don't have that much time.
Right.
So that's when I took my first quote unquote retirement from podcasting. And the problem was, like I said, the way that my wife and I have phrased this to some people is, look, some people have hobbies working on cars. Some
sure.
people have hobbies golfing.
Sure.
My hobby just happens to be really weird, obscure Mormon things and getting way too into it for people who mostly just go on Sunday and that's about it.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying my interest is a little.
It's just where your hobby is. Right. How is she with it? I've often wondered if I would ask her if she's like, oh, there he goes, Brant doing his thing again.
That is, it is an eye roll and like, well, here we went. So because of, so we've got two daughters, we've got a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And so the opportunities when we can go out together is very
just
rare.
The two of you.
Just
you
the
mean.
Two of us, mm-hmm. right? Very rare. She's actually had to tell me sometimes when we're out at dinner, I don't want to talk about a single Mormon thing. Come up with something new to talk about because I'm sick of hearing about it. Because she gets to listen to it all the time for
yeah.
me. And it's a roll of the eyes. But I think for her, it's like, well, he could be doing this or he could be playing video games for 6 hours a night.
Right.
So I'd much rather have him doing this.
Yeah.
So we, like I said, I took
so
my...
So I was reading today. Oh, Brant.
Yeah. That's
I swear.
What it was. That's
let's
what
it just
was.
Talk about something shallow for 2 seconds. How's the
that
weather?
Is exactly how it is. Hey, can we talk about this YouTube video I sent you? Because that's so much easier than this. Although it does make me really giddy when she goes, hey, so did you hear about this Mormon thing? Oh, yes, I did. Are we ready for this?
Ear to ear and his eyes light up. What?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, baby, this kind of talk. I know what's happening.
You know where this leads, you
yeah.
know. So yeah, I took my first break from it. But the thing is, because this is my weird hobby,
uh-huh.
I guess you could say I could leave the Mormonism, but I couldn't leave it alone.
Sure.
And I say that in the sense of, look, I mean, I'm still a faithful, active churchgoer.
Yeah.
It's not like I took a break from the church. It was
right.
just covering Mormonism as I had done previously.
Do you think you were exhausted from it? Because there was a time right after the Kate Kelly, John DeLynn, that for me, I just was like, oh,
yeah,
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, I still continue to do episodes of the Cultural Hall, certainly, but it was like for me to be as invested in it, I guess, emotionally.
Yeah.
And it probably showed in the physical, you know, output of the podcast, etc. And by podcast, I mean shows, that it's just like, okay, I need just a breather.
Yeah, I think I think that played a factor. And I don't, you tell me. So I'm going to tell you my theory, and I want you to tell me yes
tell
or no.
Me.
Okay? My theory is not so much the issues themselves, because I think the issues themselves are very valid ones. For example, the whole concept of excommunication,
right?
Is what Kate Kelly and John DeLitt did an excommunicable offense compared to, and I say this because I've had to cover a lot of Mormon news, that was very high profile, and
sure.
That was more high profile because of them. But compared to, say, some of the white-collar crimes that we've had happen in Utah with very prominent Mormons.
Sure.
Who we don't know if they're excommunicated or not, but they're not.
Yeah, the assumption, I guess, is that they are. But you don't know.
You don't know.
Right.
You know. So I think the bigger problem. So on the one hand, I sit there and say, there's still a lot to get into, but I think the bigger problem is really how people react to so much of it. I think it's probably indicative of not just Mormonism, but everything going on right now. We're so quick to say, okay, let's separate into our faith camps, and we're going to lob out oversimplified statements on each one of these issues,
right?
Because we're going to get the likes and the retweets in our own camps, and we're not going to engage on those issues at all. Because I think it's much more difficult to acknowledge. For example, as a believing Mormon, a disaffected Mormon has valid points. For example, the Mormon Leaks group, right? I don't particularly care for their tactics. I don't like what they're doing, but I will be completely honest with you. I download every single one of the documents that they put out. I read every single one of them. I follow it because I think it's a fascinating insight into everything that's going on with the church as an organization. On the other hand, I also sit there and say, you're not really showing that much discretion with a lot of these things. You're just dumping it out there. For example, a couple weeks ago, or a couple, probably about a year ago or 6 months ago, everything kind of rolls together.
Yeah, right.
This stuff, right? They released a pay stub that had Henry B. Eyring's pay on there. You can make valid arguments on either side why it should or shouldn't have happened. I personally think that that kind of goes beyond the line a little bit.
Sure.
But I also understand seeing what their compensation is. Because if anything, that causes the discussion to happen. And it causes people to start having that discussion of, what does this mean? Is this a moderate stipend? Well, some people might say yes. Some people might say no. Let's have that discussion instead of, we say it's a moderate stipend because that's what we've been told to say. I don't think it's a moderate stipend because it's six figures. Okay, so where are we going to come to the middle of?
Right.
That was the exhausting part for me.
The particular incident with that that I found so fascinating, and I just had never thought of it, which is why I appreciate some of those things just like Mormon League brings about, right? Like, I just hadn't thought about it. My thought was, once they become an apostle of the church, that, like, you're just sort of taken care of, right? That there's not, like, payment out, but, like, they just are like, well, I had to buy food, so they run the card and the church pays for it. I didn't understand that it would be like a, hey, here's the allotment and the budget, right? Because I don't feel like, or maybe they are with that money that they're given, like, well, I got to fly to Peru to dedicate the temple, so is that part of it? I don't know. I would assume that the church just kind of covers it. So on that end, then you start to go, well, lay clergy, hang on. A six-figure unlay clergy. But to me, it just became a thing where it was like, okay, well, that's interesting information. Does it shake my testimony? Not necessarily, but I know to some that's like the church is a corporation. It's like, hang on, why are our higher CEOs making six figures when everyone else is paying 10%? And do they pay 10% on that?
Right. And on Elder or President Eyring's pay stub, he actually, I think if you look at some of the pencil marks they put on there, it looked like he was actually factoring tithing into that.
Oh, really?
If I remember correctly. But I think the bigger thing is, with all those things that you said,
right,
we don't have an environment on either side where we can have those discussions.
Right.
And I think that's it's culturally, it's institutionally a little bit, but it's also just how we are as humans. We don't want to have those discussions. It makes us uncomfortable.
Right.
And I think that's what really started getting me into Mormon news. It was two things. Number one, I needed my outlet. I'm probably like an addict. You know, I needed my fix somehow, some way, right? But number two, I thought it was very important for, and I try and be as objective as I can. I put snark in there, all right? I'm not particularly nice to, like,
this LDS. Speaking about the Mormon News Report.
The Mormon
Report.
News Report, yeah. So I'm not particularly nice to, like, the Deseret News sometimes or LDS Living. But I try and get everything out there, and I try and be objective, mostly because I want people to know all the issues that are going on to be able to have some, lack of a better term, informed takes on everything.
Sure.
Versus hearing it from their news sources that they want to, not news sources, hearing it from the personalities that they want to on social media, and having that drive the discussion versus actually looking at it yourself to say, okay, what exactly is going on?
Right. It's that approach to, like, I always have felt like as members of the church, we should know what's going on in the church, right? Even though it's ugly that a bishop was a kid toucher or something like that.
Right.
Like, I think it's important to at least be aware enough to go, all right, this can be a tendency with people, yep. not specifically Mormon people, but people who have authority over other people, that to be predatory occasionally. Yep. So I am going to be careful for myself, be careful for my children or those who I have stewardship over, and be aware that things like this happen instead of walk blindly into it. Well, a bishop would never, or a return right. missionary would never.
And to that point, so one of the little columns or sections I put in there is the Mormons behaving badly. Mm-hmm. It was put in there a little bit as a joke, but it was also put in there very seriously for that exact reason. When I have to report on a story, and when I say report, that's very loosely. It's mm-hmm. basically seeing if there's a news report out there and mm-hmm. then throwing that in there. But when I have to report on a story like that, it does make me a little sick to my stomach just to sit here and go, this is happening. And mm-hmm. I don't like doing this because, A, I know my bishop in my ward, I would have utmost trust in him. Mm-hmm. But B, we also need to be a little bit careful. One of the things that my wife and I have talked about is because I've had to cover a lot of this stuff and because I'm fully ingrained and engrossed in a lot of this stuff, you realize that bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And so I've told my wife, look, I don't have a problem. I've got a very great relationship with my bishop. I don't have a problem telling my bishop, I would feel much more comfortable if you're going to interview anyone, either of my daughters, to have the Relief Society president or the young women's president, or the primary president in the room with you.
Sure.
Not because I don't trust you, but just because I've heard too many things, and it just would make me feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, when you take an approach like that, you know, you understand the stories that are out there, mm-hmm. you use rational, critical thinking,
right.
and you try and work within the framework of what we have, I think that makes resolving some of these issues a lot easier versus
right.
the retrenchment of, well, our bishops are perfect and they don't
right.
do anything wrong.
Right.
Great. I've got a whole boatload of stories I can yeah. bring up.
Let me refer you to where you're incorrect. Have you ever faced any sort of retribution from church stuff for anything you've done online?
No, not really. Interestingly,
because you know they're watching you.
yeah, that's...
I forget what that board is called, but you know you're being watched. Do you know what it is off the top of your head?
Yeah, the Strengthening the Church Members Committee.
Yeah.
I can tell you for
which,
a fact.
Which, by the way, everyone listening, is a real thing.
It's legit.
The Strengthening the Church?
Strengthening the Church Members Committee.
Yeah.
It's a group of people who kind of monitor all the chatter and everything that are going on online, specifically some personalities, and they keep an eye on it. Now,
blogs, podcasts.
We don't have much information on it. The church hasn't released much information.
They won't talk about it either.
They won't talk about it. And you and I know this for a fact because
yes.
we've asked them about it.
Yes.
Said, hey, give me some info. But yeah, it's always a little nerve-wracking when it's like, oh yeah, I know for a fact they watch you.
Yeah.
I know for a fact they watch me.
Right.
Now, on the one hand, I can sit there and go, that's really Orwellian and that's kind of creepy.
Sure.
On the other hand, I also sit there and say, And this is where it makes people uncomfortable. The church is an organization, right?
Sure.
So where I work, we monitor things.
Yeah,
all
I was just
going to
say,
time.
General Motors, you can dang
oh,
well
yeah.
bet that they're like, what are people saying about this? What
right.
do they say? Who's that? That's a huge thing against us or whatever. I'm going to watch that for sure.
And so for people who say, oh, they're compiling files and files of every tweet that you and I have tweeted out like during General Conference, right?
Right.
They could do that, but they also could be compiling those files and say, okay, so what are people like Richie talking about?
Right.
What if we put Richie and Brant in this certain demographic, what are the things that they're talking about? What's working well with them?
Right.
What are things that are on their mind? So, like, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
But
it does seem a little creepy.
Yeah. Well, so I know for a fact that I have quite a few people of LDS Public Affairs that follow the news report.
Sure.
I have quite a few, and I'm
everybody
under,
watch out. He's going to drop a whole lot
I'm
of
not,
names right here. Get ready
I'm
to
actually,
pick them up.
I'm operating under some confidentiality, but I know that I've got some fairly prominent professors
sure.
who are subscribers to the report. I know that I think my bishop might know about it because I've talked about it with him in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never been an issue where it's like, oh, Brother Malone, we need to bring you in and we need to talk about this.
Sure.
Part of it's probably because I am going to church in the same ward that I grew up in.
Sure.
And so they remember, 14-year-old Brant, and now they're seeing 33-year-old Brant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's different if I move, hypothetically out here to Utah.
Well,
where
it's
no
Bishop
one knows
Roulette.
Me. And that's the other thing, too, is, my bishops have been like, of course he's kind of nuts. Like, we all know this.
Yeah.
Like, this is no big deal.
Yeah, he's
going to
take it online. Of course he is. It's Brant.
Yeah. So that being said, the surprising thing is from the members of my ward who read the report, they love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I get a lot of them that'll email me their comments and thoughts and things like that. And it's fun. It's fun for me because it's like, hey, yeah, of course I want to have this discussion because what the heck else am I going to do?
Right.
What else am I going to talk about?
So let's talk specifically how people can get the Mormon News Report and what exactly it is. We sort of talked
sure.
around
yeah.
about it, assumed that a lot of people know exactly what it is.
It's a podcast, kind of. It's
sure.
Also, so an email.
Yeah, so
most
it's two
of the time.
it's an email. It's a daily email that's sent out at like 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, if my work schedule permits it, or if my vacation schedule permits it.
Right.
You've seen over the last little bit that has been difficult. So it's that, and it can be anywhere from, I don't know, 700 words to, I think last Wednesday I put one out that had 4,000 words in it, which I know for an avid reader like you, Richie, is like just heaven,
yeah.
Right? We'll call it Richie's bathroom reader or something
yeah.
like that. So there's that. And what we
How
do
people
is
get that?
You can go to theculturalhall.com/Mormon-news-report. You can see all the archives there. You can go on Twitter and message me on Twitter. If you actually look at one of the latest Mormon News Report postings at the bottom, there's a sign-up link. All we need is your email address and a zip code for demographic purposes, and you'll be included in the system.
Awesome.
So there's that. There's also the Mormon News Report podcast, which I started up with Brian Whitney, and we're kind of doing the same thing. We're taking the top stories of Mormon news. We're having some fun with it. We're bringing on some prominent personalities. So, for example, today on the 24th, we have Lindsey Hanson Park coming on to talk Sunstone.
Nice.
Last week, we had Terrell Givens. You might have heard of him. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know. And we'll have
a previous guest of the Cultural Hub.
yes. Well, we have people like James Goldberg, Melissa Leilani Larson, Tracy McKay. We've got Max Mueller coming up in September. So all these people that are prominent within the Mormon area, and it's probably going to skew a little more in-depth than some of the other podcasts that might be out there, mostly because Brian and I are interested in having these higher quality discussions than what's out there.
Careful how you say higher quality, my friend.
Let me put it this way. Richie, do you really care about getting into the nuances of the Mormon history of the evolution of race, specifically in 1890s Utah, and how that affected all these other things
so
going on?
So let's say deeper, but not maybe higher.
All right. Deeper. So that's that. We've just started that up, and that comes out every single Monday. You can catch it on the Cultural Hall podcast feed. So
yeah,
it should
for a
be
little
dropping
while.
This morning. And we also have a dedicated feed. So you could just search Mormon News Report, and you could find it through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast from.
And the Twitter, you said it's at Mormon News?
At the Mormon News.
Mormon News.
So you'll see the news report out there. If I'm bored in church or something like that, you'll see whatever I've got out there. Specifically, General Conference weekend is when I do most of my tweeting and
sure.
squatting and stuff like that.
Let us take a break again. We'll come back in the third block. I've got those three questions that I asked
oh,
you.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about maybe a little bit of future stuff.
You got
for
it.
You
yeah.
as well. Coming back in the third block.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Culture Hall. It's Brant Malone. And so what's the future then as you see it? Obviously, you see yourself continuing to do the Mormon News Report weekly podcast, for the unforeseeable
yep.
future. Or the foreseeable future, I guess, is the right word to say. So what else?
Oh, that's a great question. I've got a ton of different ideas, half-baked ideas, different proposals I want to do. The biggest problem is going to be time.
Sure.
You know this as well as I do. When you got a full-time job, it's tough to devote it to some of your pet projects. And
right.
let's be honest with each other. Mormons aren't the most...
financially giving.
There you go. I was trying to find a better word than like they're pretty cheap, frankly.
Yeah.
And so advertising is going to be tough to be able to do this full time. And you know what? I don't know if I want to do it full time.
Right.
I heard a story about a golfer who was at a driving range or a putting green or something like that. And someone came up to him and said, "Oh, you're a professional golfer. That sounds awesome. I'd love to do that." And the golfer said, "I don't think you understand what this means to be a professional golfer. This means I have to sit here and I have to hit this same putt 30,000 times. This means when I go golfing or to the driving range or anything like that, it's not just leisurely stress releasing. It is work."
Yeah.
And I think that that's where I might get a little uncomfortable, saying, great, this is now going to become my work and my life instead of just being a pet hobby that keeps me intellectually stimulated. So what's going to happen in the future? I don't know. We've got the podcast. We're playing around with a few things with the podcast here and there. As a matter of fact, we just started a Patreon feed for the podcast. So if anyone,
what does that mean?
So for $1 a month, we interview some really interesting people. Cool. One of the things that we've noticed is we cap it at 20 minutes. But even still, there's a lot of great discussions that are still happening. So what we're doing is we're offering the Mormon News Report podcast extended sessions for $1 a month. That's all we ask. You can give more if you want.
I love that that's how you did it. That's $1 a month. That's all we ask.
You can get access to the extended feed. So cool. It's going to have the Mormon News Report podcast plus the extended interview. For example, we only did 20 minutes with Lindsey Park yesterday that released today. The extended feed, it'll have a full 40-minute interview with Lindsey where her and I go back and forth about the role of Mormons versus disaffected Mormons, specifically with regards to Sunstone. So that's what we're exploring there. The news report email itself, I don't know if anything's going to change there. We've talked about maybe doing some stuff with video, but I think it's all going to be a time thing, a time and a money thing.
What about family? More kids?
Yeah, so, well, I don't know. After this week, we might cap it at two. No, my wife comes
from... Vacation dad is my favorite, where it's like, oh, I didn't even want these two, for crying out loud.
No, it's so my wife's been out here for 3 weeks. Uh-huh. I came out here for the last week. It's like the three-year-old has been running the entire house. The kid's going to bed at like 11:30 at night. And then I get to come out and be like the drill sergeant dad saying, no, three-and-a-half-year-old, you're going to go to bed at 8 o'clock because you're 3.5 years old.
Right.
Right? No, you can't eat Otter Pops for dinner.
Right.
Because that's not what normal
people... What, so Grandma and Papa are just letting...
They're just having a ball.
Boo. Yeah, you bet. Otter Pops, sure.
So, as far as kids, I mean... We've talked about maybe having one more, maybe having two more. We're going to cap it at four, though.
Yeah. Actually, no more than four.
No, my wife comes from a big family. I come from a family of three. And
how many in your wife's family?
Including her, I think there's like 7, 8, 9.
Oh my gosh!
No, it's like prototypical, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we're like, I don't know if we want to.
So it's a nice compromise.
Yeah.
Keep working at General Motors.
As of right now, I'll be there for a bit.
Do you ever get worried? Are you one that would go on a chopping block with that kind of stuff? Because you always hear like, moving south.
Yeah, no, I think the General Motors, we went through our rough times in 2008. And interestingly enough, that's one of the things we keep hearing about is we don't want to go through the bankruptcy of 2008.
Sure.
So I think what they've done, at least in my new position at work, I'm seeing a little more behind the scenes, kind of how the sausage is made. Uh-huh. What they've done is made sure that we're not going to be going through that ever again. I told you my dad worked for General Motors. Mm-hmm. I remember being in college, hearing him, on a daily basis call me and say, well, kept my job today, but five other people in my row were let go, and it messed with them a lot. Yeah. And so I don't think we're going to go through that. And I enjoy working at General Motors.
Wasn't one of the presidents of Ford or General Motors LDS? I want to say in the fairly recent history there was a CEO.
Probably Ford.
I'll have to look that up. But yeah, a fairly prominent LDS gentleman who ran one of the big car dealerships. Anyway, what's the church like in Michigan?
It's good. So I was just looking up this stat last night as one of the last religion surveys. There are 0.42% of the population in Michigan is LDS.
0.42.
So less than 1% of the population is LDS.
Less than 0.5%.
Yeah. So it's not very big, but at least in our area in the Southeast, it's mostly because as soon as you're out of Southeast Michigan or Lansing or Grand Rapids, there's just... not much there.
Really?
Especially like if you go towards northern Michigan, you have there's still a lot of hurt feelings in history regarding the Strangites, everything that happened there with James Strang, which is, it's fascinating. If you
can't drop that, you got to give at least a paraphrasing.
So Joseph Smith is assassinated. There's this big crisis for who's going to rule the church. James Strang comes up with this forged letter that Joseph Smith supposedly signed saying he's going to be the next one to lead the church.
Right.
People don't believe it. He takes a group of followers out to like Wisconsin and the northern Michigan area. Basically, they start up polygamy. They really upset the natives out there, and the natives being the Michiganders who are already there.
Yeah, not like Native Americans.
Not like Native Americans, no. Because they basically came in and said, yeah, guess what? All this stuff, it's ours. He actually called himself a king, and he ended up getting assassinated. But the Strangite group is, at least in like Wisconsin area, still pretty prominent. Because of all that, there was a lot of ill feelings. So like when the missionaries go out, they have to say, we're Mormons, but we're not those kinds of Mormons.
Right.
Because they're talking specifically about the Strangites.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's and so crazy coincidence. My mother's grandmother had a shop. They lived on Beaver Island, which is an island in like the I'm going to show you my hand. You can't see it on the radio, but like up here, there's a little island
up on the glove,
like the northern, like northwestern part of Michigan.
Okay.
Right? owned a shop and a home up there that my mother worked at during the summers. Beaver Island is where the Strangites kind of set up camp. Mm-hmm. And so there's an old Mormon jail up there and all these things. So my mother's been around this stuff since she was like, you know, 14, 15 years old.
But remember, from the first part of the conversation, convert at 21.
Right. And so actually when she was talking about joining the church, her dad was quite concerned because he's like, you're going to join the Mormons.
Listen, there's a king and polygamy. Yeah. And
this is the group you're going to go with?
Yeah.
So I actually really enjoy it because we are a smaller group. And mm-hmm. so especially in our area, there's a lot of diversity. Within my ward boundaries, we had a CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Cool.
While we've also had some pretty poor urban people mm-hmm. that are really, I mean, we are supporting them through the church and through welfare and things like that just because of the nature of their situation. So you've got this huge melting pot there, and it forces you to be very comfortable being Mormon, but also understanding that not everybody else around you is going to be Mormon.
Right.
And forcing you to integrate with all these different groups of people, specifically different religious traditions and things like that.
Opportunities to share the gospel abound, yeah?
Yeah, if you're interested in that kind of stuff.
You don't do that
anymore? No, not really.
No?
I was never the missionary type. So I spent a little bit of time.
Check that box. It's over.
I mean, listen, I'm done with that, right? Like, my resume says 2003 to 2005. Yeah. I'm done.
That's it. High end date.
I did LDS public affairs within our stake for a long time. And that, to me, that is my version of missionary work. It's my perspective on. Believers, disaffected, or whatever. If you choose to join the church, that's your choice. If you choose to leave the church, mm-hmm. that's your choice. But what I want to do is give people the opportunity to say, these are some of the very good things that the LDS Church does. This is a way to view the LDS Church. This is a way to overcome some of those stereotypes. So I really enjoyed working with different religious leaders, state and government officials, things like that. That's my version of missionary work.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't take a, you know, you hear about people who have like Book of Mormons on the plane with them, and that to me is not a thing that I can do. So
no.
Props to those people.
Yep.
I've been that before. I was very much that in kind of my mid-20s. But for me anymore, like it's, I sort of take this approach. Obviously, being here in Utah, you're either Mormon or you have been. And so like my approach with people will just be like, hey, you know what? I'm still going.
Right.
So why don't you come with me?
Right.
And it's interesting sort of the responses where it's like, okay. And the nice thing is that I feel like with most people whom I talk to, either, you know, if they're disaffected or whatever, I feel like that they know that if they ever had any desire to come back, that they would come to me and be like, okay, hey, right. You know what? I want to do this. Help me out.
Right.
Help me through this.
So I've got two stories about that. I remember 2020, a while back, was doing a piece on the fundamentalist Mormons. They do that like once every two years, right?
When they need a rating spike.
Right. That's basically what it is. Probably specifically in Utah. Oh, hey, we're going to talk about the Mormons.
So.
Yeah. So I remember having one of my friends text me and say, I think I posted on Facebook that I was watching it, or I was mm-hmm. doing live commentary on Twitter. And she texted me and said, I'm so glad you're not one of those Mormons. And for me, that's the important thing, to sit there and say, my non-LDS friends know that I'm Mormon. It's no secret.
Right.
You know? But at the same time, I'm also not going to be banging down their door saying, hey, you want to come to church with me?
Right.
That's because if they're interested, they'll approach you. On the other hand, just based on all my time that I spent in the online world, I actually have a lot of close personal friends who are disaffected Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that always means the most to me is when they reach out with legitimate questions or they want to hear a different perspective or take on something that I could sit there and go, look, you know exactly where I'm coming from. This is going to be no secret.
Right.
But here's how I approach it. And being able to have that discussion, that's the important thing. So it's a lot like you. Look, if they're interested and they want to go to church with you, they know where to find you.
Yeah.
Right. And they know that it's going to be no judgment. It'll be, yeah, sure. Come on. You sit right next to me. So.
You know, and then dialing back just a little bit, you talk about the Strangites, right? And a lot of people are like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me to note two things. One, you talk about the death of Joseph Smith and then the church after that point. I think that the narrative for a lot of people in their minds goes, Joseph Smith, people saw Brigham Young speak, saw Joseph Smith in Brigham Young, you know, whatever that means.
Right.
And then that was the next prophet. There was 2 years in between that time, A. And then second of all, that there were, I think, like 118 breakoffs from Joseph Smith's death into other religions. The most prominent of which is the Reorganized Church or the Community of Christ. And then the mainstream, which is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But there were, you know, Bickertonites yep. and Rigdonites and all these people who followed these other things. It is fascinating to me that there has not been a podcast series about that.
No, you're right. As a matter of fact, there's a guy named John Hamer uh-huh. who would be, because he's tracked a lot of that stuff. He would yeah. be great to do something like that. But, you know, I played nice, so let me get a little spicy, okay?
Please.
I think one of the problems that we're having in the church is that we've canonized our history. So we've taken our history and said, we're going to scripturize it.
Uh-huh.
We're going to say, this is exactly what happened. And so what we're finding is that's probably not the case. Now, people who've been reading dialogue and doing Mormon studies for a long time, or Mormon history for a long
right.
time, they know this stuff,
right?
Right. You talked about Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and all that stuff that happened when Brigham basically took control of the 12 and took control of the church. Some people said they saw Joseph Smith in his countenance and stuff
right.
like that. Probably didn't happen from the records that we have. And I think part of the problem that we're going through, and this is why I applaud the Church History Department and the mm-hmm. Joseph Smith Papers Project, they are trying to say, we're going to get legitimate history out there. We're not going to have faith-promoting rumors or things that might not have happened that just have become canonized that people take as fact.
Right.
But then when they go and try and research it, even with something as benign as like the story of the seagulls and the crickets,
uh-huh.
you start going and researching that going, yeah, this isn't exactly what we said.
I mean,
and that's
it
where
it was tithing and then crickets came.
And then everything was gravy.
Right.
Everything was good after that. And I think that's part of the problem that we're going through in the church. And so why do I do a lot of the things that I do? It's mostly because I want to push people to think a little deeper about these things and to investigate it. And if that means it's pushing some people in the church office buildings with what they're doing for their Sunday school curriculums,
right.
that's what I want to do, because I've seen not to be overdramatic, I've seen so many bodies in the road from people who've encountered a lot of this stuff that don't have the right context
mm-hmm.
and go to find answers, and there's no answers there, or they're
right.
given false answers. And that cannot happen,
right.
especially in 2017, when you can go on Wikipedia, which is, interestingly enough, a pretty objective source for anything within Mormonism, because
right.
you've got the believers and the ex-believers fighting about it, so you're going to find a decent middle ground there. You can go there and find that some stuff maybe doesn't match up. And I think it's all with the best of intentions. But that's where I think we need to be a lot better at that. And you will have some people that fight against that to go, we don't need that. You just need to focus on the basics.
Right.
Which I sit there and go, talk to any of these people that left the church. Any of these people who have left the church or are disaffected from the church, they're not doing it because of some superfluous reason. They're doing it because they encounter legitimately difficult things that they could not either find good answers for or couldn't find satisfactory answers.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that doing this stuff is going to fix everything.
Sure.
I think it's going to help.
I think it's fascinating because I've talked to a lot of people as far as that goes who just to find out something that they hadn't been taught, right? Not even any sort of depth of it. But, I mean, we've talked about the fact that Joseph Smith had multiple wives. You
yep.
sort of think that Brigham Young was the first, right? And more so now, I think you go, oh, okay, yeah, I knew that. Or maybe there was some sort of assumption, or, you know, everybody hears the story about how Emma pushed, you know, one of Joseph's yeah. wives down the stairs, right? But you don't sort of get a number on it. You don't sort yeah. of get it. And for people to go, wait, Joseph Smith had 42 wives, they go, why was this never told to me?
Right.
And they just can't resolve just that number or that fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of research to find out who those people were and, you know, where they came from, especially, you know, I think of the Hales and mm-hmm. the work that they've
yep.
done on that. But just that basic level of, wait, what? I've been a member of this church for 50 years,
yep.
and now?
How
I'm finding out about that?
Yeah, how common is that? How often do you hear that?
Right.
A good example of that is the Seer Stone, right?
Yeah.
So prior to that, anyone who had done any research in like the translation of the Book of Mormon or Joseph Smith's early life knew about the Seer Stone. But then you also have people that basically, as soon as they encounter something like that, they go, well, the church has never told me about this. And there was a few references and end signs like from the 70s.
Sure.
But legitimately for them, no, the church really hasn't discussed it. Although you can also hold up these end signs and say, actually, yeah, they did discuss it. And here's a quote from like Russell M. Nelson that says,
right.
okay, here's what you got. So then the church is now going through and putting out this Seer Stone. And I think they did it in a great way. As a matter of fact, I know some people have fun with it. Oh, if we look at this rock. But to me, it is actually, I'm not going to say it was a hugely emotional or spiritual experience, but it was one of those things where I'm looking at that going, this is legitimate history. Like, this is them legitimately acknowledging that Joseph Smith putting the stone in his hat to use this stone to help him translate the Book of Mormon or to dictate the Book of Mormon legitimately happened. And this is what we've got. And there's so much history wrapped up in this. There's so much spirituality wrapped up in this. So I get a little irked when people have some fun. I get it, right?
Sure.
So now you've got that out there. You've got it in an ensign. Maybe you could start working that into your Sunday school programs and things like that. But you take some of these issues, and the most difficult part, and this is where I say both to the disaffected and to the believers, okay, so how do you begin talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
We already have enough problems in sacrament meeting just keeping it on Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You really want someone getting up there and going, today my talk is going to be about Joseph Smith and his 42 wives.
Right.
Or, okay, so are you going to do it? You might be able to make a case for doing it in gospel doctrine.
Yeah, maybe.
But gospel doctrine, anyone who's been a church longer than a year is going to go to gospel doctrine.
Right.
Or you might have people who just haven't looked into it. Do you really want that to be the environment where all this stuff is coming out, especially without legitimately trained teachers knowing how to approach this sensitively? Because I will say, listen, I'm a bull in a china shop when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I've listened.
You know exactly what that's like, right? Because I'll start going, and it's like, whoa. You're on like a 400-level class when it comes to this. We got to get back down to the 200-level.
Yeah, let's boil it down.
Seminaries. I've heard people talk about we should be talking about in seminaries.
Sure.
You served your mission in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they've got early morning seminary there.
Right.
Good luck just trying to keep the kids awake. Now, maybe if you say, hey, we're going to talk about polygamy and Joseph Smith's multiple wives, that might wake the kids up.
Sure.
But I don't think it's going to be able to do with the proper justice. So personally, I think either A, we need to be much more stringent and diligent about doing this in the church universities, which also introduces.
But that doesn't allow everybody the opportunity to go to.
And then number two, it should be institute. And I've been disappointed.
But again, everybody doesn't go to that, too.
But you know what? At least
the church doesn't attend institute.
At least you could say it's there. And maybe we start opening up institute, not so much for YSAs, but for everyone to say, look, we're going to have people who've been trained in some of this stuff. And they're going to be talking about this. And so you can go and you can hear about it. And it's going to be in a, quote unquote, safe environment where you can bring up your questions and you'll have other people there. And you train whoever's teaching it to not have it go to a typical LDS meeting, which is just we're going to reaffirm all the facts and the catechisms that we've all been brought up with and all the trite phrases because it makes us feel good without actually having any content or substance behind it. So that's where I think things need to go.
And I think it just shores up the foundation, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is from David O. McKay. So back in the 50s, the Sunday school board, we weren't as correlated as we are now. The Sunday school board asked Hugh Nibley to write a Sunday school curriculum. Now I want you to think about that. Hugh Nibley writing a Sunday school curriculum. So
sure.
Hugh Nibley does what Hugh Nibley does, right? And it gets back to the Sunday school board and they're like, we can't do this. You're talking about like the ancient history of Mesopotamia and how all this correlates. And you know what Hugh Nibley does, right? And so they go to President McKay, and they're like, President McKay, we've got to tell Hugh that we can't do this. We've got to find something else for Sunday school. And President McKay said, let the members of the church reach for it. And that's what I think we need to be doing more of, is letting the members of the church reach for it, putting it out there in faithful ways. And that's what I think the Joseph Smith Papers Project is doing. It irks me when I hear people talk about, and I'm sorry I'm ranting here, but it irks me when I hear people talking about, oh, the Joseph Smith Papers Project is whitewashing things or they're trying to hide things. One of the things that I was told when this project first started, I knew someone who was on the original team. He said, the church is so sick and tired of other people having access to documents and dictating the terms of things. The church has all of the documents that whoever these people are found. So guess what? We're going to put everything out there. So there's no more allegations that we're hiding anything and that we're all working on the same level playing field. That's the kind of scholarship that we need within the church. And that's the approach we need within the church. Because I still think you look at the Joseph Smith Papers Project, you look at Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith to me is one of the most inspiring people out there because despite every single one of his faults, and if you learn anything about Joseph Smith, he was a poor business manager. He was a poor money manager. He had a temper. He wasn't always the best with people and people relations. He and Emma's relationship was fraught with difficulties. And that's why it always irks me when I see Deseret Book propping up Emma and Joseph. Of us. Oh, they're the ideal couple. Are you kidding me? These people fought all the time because of all these issues.
Sure.
They went through so many kids losing them. It played a factor in all these different things. But despite all those things, God said, I don't care. I've got something for you to do. And by golly, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to force you to do it. And I'm going to work with all your imperfections. And that's what we need to be hearing more in the church.
Yeah.
So
let's ask you three questions and then get you out of here.
So I'll try and keep it to two sentences or less then.
No, you're fine. It's the three questions we ask everybody. If you have a calling right now, what is it?
I am the Ward Young Men's president.
Oh, yeah?
I just got transitioned over about 3 months ago.
How's that? How many young men you got?
So we actually have a huge teachers quorum. We have about 15 to 17 teachers.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's massive. And within about a year, they're all going to be coming into my priest quorum.
Okay.
It's been interesting. I was a ward clerk for about 3 years before that. Mm-hmm. Probably one of my favorite callings
so far.
Which
is the calling I want.
It's awesome. Because you know what? You get to sit in bishopric meeting. You get to hear everything that goes on. Mm-hmm. You get to offer, depending on how your bishop
gossip,
runs
things. Listen to you.
I wouldn't say gossip. But it gives you a lot more context for situations that are going on. And depending on how your bishop approaches it, my bishop looked at myself and the executive secretary as like his fourth and fifth counselors.
Sure.
So you got time for another quick brief story?
Yes, please.
So when the November 5th policy came out about gay people, children of gay people not being able to be baptized in the church until they're 18 years old, not receiving the priesthood until they're 18 years old, not receiving baby blessings, it really bothered me a lot. Like, I'm really not this type of person, but I was sitting here going, I don't even know if I can go to church today.
Okay.
That's how much it bothers me. But I had this thought the night before of, I need to go. I need to go because, if anything, as much as it bothers me, it might be bothering other people more. And it might mean something to know, I know he's really, really ticked off about this, and he's here despite all that.
Sure.
If anything, to say, hey, it's no secret to anyone in my ward how I feel about a lot of these things.
Right.
But the fact that I'm still there, it means something. We had bishopric that next morning. We talked about it a little bit, and I went off.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really thankful for our bishopric and our bishop for giving me that space to do that. That's the kind of relationship that I have with my bishop, and that's what I think should be happening. Because in a safe environment like that, there was no question of like, well, Brother Malone, do we need to have a temple recommend interview? They know exactly where I stand on all these things.
Right.
But the fact that we could have that discussion and to hear someone – to have members of the church, you know where most of them are going to stand on that issue. Well, the church made the adjustment, so we need to go with the church on this. But to have someone else who's like, look, guys, I'm just as faithful and just as active as the rest of you, and this really bothers me. And X, Y, and Z, here's why.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really enjoyed that calling so much, because it gave me that latitude to be able to, in a sense, offer a voice sometimes for the voiceless that might not be heard.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, what would you pick?
Can I be like the ward podcaster?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Here's the thing. I've thought about it. A ward podcast where you interview someone from the ward every week to get to know your ward.
Oh, yeah.
There was a ward I had on my mission there where they asked everyone in the ward to share their testimony. One page, you know, whether it be their conversion story or what they believed as far as that goes. And then they had it in the foyer so you could, and there was a picture of it.
Yep.
So if it was a family testimony or if it was just an individual's, so you could read through other people's testimonies. It was huge for gaining the ward to be close together.
Especially because then you're looking at it going, oh, wow. So either A, your experience isn't that different from mine, or B, wow, I didn't know all these things about you. And it just gives this personality to your ward that might not be there.
Because
look, I love the phrase a ward family. Like that's what we should be. And of course, you want to know a little bit more about your family.
Right.
Like, that's what you do.
You don't want the crazy uncle.
Right.
What?
I mean, no one wants to hear what crazy Uncle Brandt thinks.
Yeah.
About things, but,
well, yeah. Amen. And then the last thing is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Ah, that is a great question. I think one of the favorite parts of my faith is that a main tenet of Mormonism is the concept of Zion. The fact that we are all one family, and that despite our differences, look, I love my family to death, and I drive my family absolutely crazy with certain things. But you know what? Despite the fact that I drive them crazy, we're still family at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole concept of Zion, is when we're doing those types of things, when we're embracing everyone. I personally think that Mormonism is a much bigger tent than we make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we need to be shooting for. And so I don't care if you're conservative, Republican, liberal, Democrat. I don't care if you're gay, if you're straight, I think the only qualifier I might put on there is if you're a fan of Ohio State University.
Oh, geez.
Like, look, I've got my standards, all right? But I think that that's the biggest thing, is we need to be celebrating our differences. And so often within Mormonism, we're focusing too much on the things that make us alike and similar and not the things that make us different. And sometimes the things that make us different can bring us closer. I can have discussions about some of these issues, these things within Mormonism, with people from a variety of different viewpoints. And there's still that mutual respect and love and understanding. And that's what I think the best part is. You talk to anybody, I don't care if you're disaffected or you're the most strong Mormon, one of the biggest strengths that we have is that when there's a crisis or when there's an issue, we come together.
Right.
And I think, in my mind, that is one of the most perfect concepts of Zion, and that's one of the strongest parts of my faith.
Well, we hope this episode has nourished and strengthened your body. If you aren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. If you have not yet, subscribe both to the written and the auditory portion of the Mormon News Report. You can find that at theculturalhall.com. Or you can always tweet at The Mormon News, and he'll send something back to you. You can just get signed up for those things that way. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.